Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer, hopefully still germ-free, Williams.
Is that going to be the default for the next couple of months?
For as long as we are going to be doing it this way remotely, yes. I will make sure to ensure that I do not get any cyber cooties.
Okay. Well, I don't know how the heck are you going to get cyber cooties?
You don't know.
Things
can get transmitted.
Yeah, it's not like I work with computers.
Fishing
on a daily
and whatever.
Basis.
But we got a great show in store for you today, as we are going to be talking about a classic film, but still a film that is very much talked about even till today because of the fact that there's a great opportunity coming up to see it, and that is Dirty Dancing. So stick around as we talk about that and get into the nitty-gritty and see if we can persuade or Patrick Swayde never mind persuade you to
right there
to join us in watching it this Friday. So stick around as we talk about that, but before we do, Spence, take it over.
Hey, tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on our social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. We got over 200 episodes on our website, so you can check us out at filmlosophers.com. You can listen to last week's episode. It was a great episode. We had our good friend and filmmaker Jeffrey Fong show up and be a part of the conversation where we talked about the impact the quarantine has had on the industry. So that was a really engaging and fun conversation.
You know,
so if you get a chance...
really enjoyed that conversation last week. It was super good.
It was really good. And that episode is currently on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also on every single streaming platform you can find us at. It is our latest episode aside from this one. So check us out over there. But we are not talking about last week. We are talking about this week.
Yes.
And this week we are talking about Dirty Dancing. This is the movie that I'm pretty sure every person out there who's listening is like, why are they talking about this movie? This is the movie that my mom and dad used to watch. They would send us to bed and then they would watch it in the dark, and then in the morning mom would wake up and start dancing all over the place or whatever. I don't know people's lives. I know people are weird. But yeah, this is one of those movies that kind of encapsulated the late 80s, early 90s, and was honestly a film that took a lot of people by surprise. So we're going to be talking about that, and not only just for the fact that it's a relevant film, but also for the fact that Lionsgate the studio, has been doing what's called Lionsgate Live, A Night at the Movie. So every Friday night for the next couple of weeks, they're going to be showcasing a new movie live on YouTube, and this Friday's episode, this Friday's live stream on YouTube is Dirty Dancing. So we want to persuade you to check it out with us, because we're going to watch it as well, by giving you a little, you know, behind the look. If you haven't seen it yet, which I'm hoping you have, the movie's been out for like, what, 30 years?
Well, I mean, so many movies have come out since then. It's easy for it to be on some of the younger people's, like, not their radar.
Very true. I'm pretty sure everybody's probably just heard of the sequel and not the original. But
yeah, I know I have. I heard about the sequel first.
So before we get into this review, Spencer, why don't you give him that old official synopsis goodness?
Baby is one listless summer away from the Peace Corps. Hoping to enjoy her youth while it lasts, she's disappointed when her summer plans deposit her at a sleepy resort in the Catskills with her parents. Her luck turns around, however, when the resort's dance instructor, Johnny, enlists Baby as his new partner, and the two fall in love. Baby's father forbids her from seeing Johnny, but she is determined to help him perform the last big dance of the summer.
It's so funny because it sounds like you're like talking about the synopsis of like one of those cheesy romance novels.
This basically, like, oh my is gosh, that. I was. Yes, you're correct.
directed by Emil Ardolino and written by Eleanor Bergstein, the film stars Patrick Swayze, Jennifer Grey, Jerry Orbach, and Cynthia Rhodes. If any of those names sound familiar to you, Patrick Swayze obviously has done a lot of stuff. I mean, if you've known him from either this movie, you should know him from Ghost, if not this one, Tu Wong Fu. If you don't know that one, he was in Donnie Darko. He's been in a lot of films. Jerry Orbach, I mean, come on, Law and Order, who can go wrong? Jennifer Grey, the big sister to Matthew Broderick from Ferris Bueller's Day Off, which, by the way, little tidbit for you, if you don't know, Jennifer Grey and Matthew Broderick were actually secretly dating while they were filming that movie, and while they played brother and sister. A couple of the little pieces of knowledge for you. Patrick Swayze had to convince Jennifer Grey to be in this film because she had disliked him so much while filming Red Dawn back in 1984. So there was so much animosity on the set from Red Dawn that, you know, Jennifer Grey was practically like, I don't want anybody, please, anybody but Patrick Swayze. And essentially what happened was Patrick Swayze asked to have like a little bit of time to talk with Jennifer Grey. They went to a room, talked for like about 30 minutes. After about 30 minutes to an hour, they came out, both of them with red eyes and, you know, snotty boogers, and they both agreed to work amicably for the film. So a little bit of news for you there. The movie's line, "Nobody puts baby in a corner," was voted as the number 98 movie quote by the American Film Institute, which obviously out of 100, it's higher up on the list, but it made the list nevertheless. That's like saying...
Yeah, but out of so many movies, that was 98?
Yeah.
Like, that seems weird.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's number 98. It's like saying, I was on the Super Bowl winning team. Yeah, but you were like fourth string kicker that nobody was going to put into the game. So, director Emil Ardolino encouraged the actors and actresses to improvise and often kept the cameras rolling even if actors and actresses went, quote, off script. There's a lot of scenes in the film that actually are ad-lib or, like, not really per se part of the script. Like, I don't know if you remember the scene where he's running his hands down the side of her body and she keeps laughing and giggling. And he gets, like, obviously frustrated. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that scene, Spencer?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. So in that scene, they're actually frustrated, and he's actually frustrated because they're like recording late into the wee hours of the night, and she was just not having it. She was like, she was giddy. She was like, I guess she had low blood sugar, and everything was making her giggly. And Patrick Swayze was legitimately like frustrated. That wasn't just him acting. That was him legitimately frustrated. So, you know, when you catch the...
I remember thinking, I'm like, man, he is really frustrated with her.
Yeah.
It was pretty bad.
And the film is filled with those, and we'll talk a little bit more about those in a little bit. But before we get into that, a little bit of the numbers. The budget for this film sat at about $6 million. It's not really been specified, but I know it's between $5 and $6 million. Opening weekend, it brought in about $3.9 million. The lifetime box office total came out to $214.6 million. Like, that has to be a pretty good return, seeing as the movie was only made on a $6 million budget. So it like almost more than quadrupled its budget. It multiplied its budget several times over.
A lot more than four.
Yeah, 40 times its budget. So. Either way, it was a very notable film. So we're going to be talking about this movie. And, of course, we want to also give, and mind you, one of the things I kind of wanted to say is we're not sponsored by Lionsgate, but what Lionsgate is doing...
No, it was mostly just like something that, you know, everyone has the opportunity to just go onto YouTube and see a movie for free.
Well, and the thing is that the... So Lionsgate is doing this in partnership with some of the theaters, what's it called? So they're doing this in partnership with other theaters where they're actually making the opportunity to where, as you're watching, you can donate to the organization that they have. I forget the name of the organization offhand, but that money goes back to helping all of the furloughed theater workers. So projectionists, people who, you know, help you with your food, the concession stand, ticket holders, ticket takers and all that kind of stuff. The organization actually allows you to donate to them so that way you can actually give back to the theaters, to all the people who actually, you know, make these type of opportunities possible. And that's a really great thing, because not many people are thinking about their local mm-hmm. theater workers. Not many people are thinking about their local, their local box offices, their local, you know, cinema houses. And this is an opportunity where, yes, they're showing a free movie, but at the same time, they're reminding you. I got a chance. So this last Friday, they did a live stream of Hunger Games. And Hunger Games was obviously, if you guys don't remember, film based on the book by Suzanne Collins, Jennifer Lawrence, you know, all those. Anyway, all those people. What's her name? Jamie Lee Curtis actually opened up from her home and did a recording there prior to the actual live stream. And she talked about how, you know, aside from her house, the movie theaters was one of the places that she was always at all the time. And that this is an opportunity to give back to the people who help make those opportunities possible for us, for movie lovers, for people like you and I, Spence, who love going to the movies at least once every week, which we do. Technically, we used to go to the movies at least once a yeah. week. And, to help us help bring awareness to the fact that the industry, even though the top of the top of the top of the industry, you know, with actors and directors and writers and all those other people, even though they're, you know, sitting fine and whatnot, there's still all the other people who handle all the stuff, you know, in terms of distribution and theater workers and stuff like that. And they still are the ones who need help as well, you know, and they're a part of this industry,
right.
You know, whether or not if you want to say it or not, they're a part of this industry. So I got to give kudos to Lionsgate for making that possible. And I'm pretty sure I'll figure out the name of that, organization. But it's definitely a really cool,
Are you talking about the Will Rogers Motion Picture?
Is it the Will Rogers
Pioneers Foundation?
Is it the Will Rogers?
Because that's what they have on their website, and it's the most prominent, and I'm going to say it's that.
Well, I mean, hey, if that's what it is, it is what it is. I mean, I think it, yeah, the Motion Picture Pioneers or the Motion Picture Fund, it's essentially a fund that they use to help. Like I said, it's money that's giving back to furloughed theater workers and so forth. So aside from everything else that's going out from the government and whatnot, this is also going to be a part of that to help them too. So it's super cool. But I say all that to say the next film they're going to be debuting this Friday, which this Friday is the 24th, I believe. Yeah, the 24th. They'll be showing Dirty Dancing. So like I said, we wanted to discuss this and talk about it because I know me and Spence, we're going to make every effort to watch it and to support what this organization is doing, what Lionsgate is doing, what the Will Rogers Foundation is doing, and really bring awareness to the fact that, you know, this goes back to what we were talking about last week in about like the community. We need that kind of community. We need to make sure that we're still there for each other. We're still showing up. We're still, you know, being able to be that shoulder to lean on in this time. Like maybe not physically because, you know, Corona, but still like in some way or another, in some capacity of support, we can do that. So I think that's really great, and you can't go wrong with somebody doing something like that, especially for an organization that we deeply love like that. So,
yeah.
So diving right into this film, obviously, if you haven't seen this movie, spoilers. We're gonna have spoilers, but it's not about the destination in this particular film. It's the journey. So we're gonna talk about this film and keep the spoilers to a minimum, but still.
And you know, if you haven't seen it, it's gonna be on YouTube on Friday, so
exactly. Exactly. So here's a big question for you, Spence. Had you seen Dirty Dancing prior to you watching it for this?
What do you think the answer to that question is?
I'm more than certain. I'm like I'm like the Lysol that kills germs. I'm 99.999% certain that you probably have only heard or seen the poster of it.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much correct. The
survey says I'm right. Oh my gosh, I should be a statistician.
No, like we're just friends. That's why you know so well. Yeah, so no, I hadn't. The only things about this movie I knew were, you know, Patrick Swayze was in it. I didn't even realize that was the sister from Ferris Bueller until you said that.
Yeah. Jennifer Grey.
And the line, nobody puts baby in the corner. Oh, also Time of Your Life, or whatever the title of that song is.
Yeah. You know what you also missed?
That's all I knew.
You know what you missed? The song that was used in the center
Wayne
of the
Knight.
Film. Huh?
I said the, Wayne Knight because he was in this movie.
No, well, yeah, Wayne Knight was in this movie, but which is funny because I had just recently saw Toy Story 2, and I'm like, the chicken man from Al's Toy Barn. It's Wayne Knight. So when Patrick Swayze drives off after he's been fired and he goes and he leaves, the song that plays, that's actually sung by Patrick Swayze himself. She's like the wind. Oh, the trees. Amazing. Yeah, that's Patrick Swayze. Yeah, it's funny because, well, we'll get into that in a second. So in terms of your expectations prior to actually seeing the film for the first time, so this is going to be interesting because this is actually your first impression of the, or your first impressions of the film. So I want to know, what was your expectation going in? Like, you haven't seen it. You maybe saw a trailer. Knowing you, you probably saw like reviews prior to actually seeing it. No, you were probably,
I've never seen a review. I know like very little about, actually I didn't know anything about what really this movie was about. Like, I just knew it was one of those movies that like, basically moms get really excited about. So I had no idea what it was in store for.
It was the early 90s, late 80s Twilight. 1987.
Yeah, I guess so. So sad. So I was really blank slate on this one. And after seeing it, I guess my question is, why was this so popular? Because like watching it, like I kind of don't get it. Like for the most part, I feel like I don't get why it's so popular until at the end of the movie when Patrick Swayze just looks at Jennifer Grey and I'm like, it's that look. That look is the whole reason that this movie is popular right now. Like at all.
So, okay. So you had no ideas, no expectations going into it. You honestly didn't. Okay. So in terms of literally leaving the theater, what was your ultimate, like your just ultimate first impression was, why was this ever popular?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, not that it all was right. super bad, but like, I the way it's talked about in like popular culture, like the fact that I know nobody puts baby in the corner without having seen this movie, like that kind of like, why did it spread? Why is this important? I don't fully get it, you know?
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. It's one of those, like pariahs that you're not too sure why it's so, like why the trend is so popular, but it's just popular. It's like the Tide eating, you know, challenge, like Tide Pod eating challenge. Like, why was that popular? But it was, and people were doing it, and they literally had to do ads that said, don't eat it. So
it's like that, except less offensive, you know?
so let me clue you in on a little bit of the information here. So there's a reason why when I stated the cast, I inputted the writer, Eleanor Bergstein. So Eleanor Bergstein was a author who had written, she's a writer, and she wrote this book, or she wrote this screenplay, and it was essentially a film where she was a dancer growing up. It essentially mirrors her own personal life. Like, she was a young Jewish girl who went to the Catskills with her family. Her father was a doctor, and she liked dirty dancing, which during the 50s or 60s, that was just like exactly how you see it, which this film takes place during the 60s, 1963. Mm-hmm. So So she doesn't claim it was based on her life, but I mean, come on, it seems pretty close. But essentially what happened was this film went through so many different it went through so many different studios to see if it would get picked up. Now, you're thinking 1987. What's at the height of 1987? You got like action stars like, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone, Jean-Claude Van Damme. You got Steven Seagal. You have these male-heavy driven storylines. Nobody's going to want to pick up a film that centers around, or a script that centers around, a female lead, which in essence, this is what it was. It was a female lead, female-led driven character story, completely based on Baby, you know, and it was a hard sell that ended up resulting in like almost over 40 rejection letters from studios, and not just major studios, even the minor studios and studios that were like the bottom of the barrel studios. So at the time in the 80s, there was a company called Vestrom. Vestrom was a direct to VHS company. They took essentially movies, and they were the ones who were actually distributing the movies via VHS until the name, you know, the actual studios realized, hey, we could just do this ourselves. So Vestrom needed to figure out a way to still make revenue. So they started making really bad B movies. Like, we're talking really bad. And some of those, let's see if we can find some of these titles. It's like there were some really bad titles out there. Let's see. Movies that you would probably know.
Oh, yeah. You might be looking at a list of future movies that we're going to review.
I'm worried about that. Let's see. Oh, there's a Vestrom Video Collector series. Okay. Things like Beyond Reanimator. I think they're the ones who did... Oh, you know what? They're the ones who
Beyond
did...
Beyond Reanimator? That sounds amazing.
You're looking at things like the Wishmaster Collection. They did... let's see. The Gate. They did... what was that? Little Monsters?
Do you remember Little Monsters?
And I think even Maximum Overdrive, which was one of Stephen King's, I think that was Stephen King's first directed films that he did. But yeah, like all those, they belong to Vestron. So Vestron would get apparently like dump trucks full of like tossed out scripts, and the people there would go through them and see which ones they would want to do. And they found Dirty Dancing in there, and they're like, the guy that was there, he was like, yeah, I want to do this, and they ended up doing the film. But they weren't certain as to who they were going to have casting it in at the time, because Vestron was like known for its like B movie type selections. They wanted like this sexy bombshell that was from like the 80s that just wasn't probably going to work best. Then they found Jennifer Grey, immediately fell in love with her. And then they weren't sure who they were going to pick for their Johnny. It almost came down to Billy Zane.
Billy Zane.
And here's the funny part. The main producer on the film said that Billy Zane's dancing looked like a young Jewish boy had just learned how to dance for his bar mitzvah.
That's so unnecessarily mean.
There's footage of it, and she's not wrong. That's all I have to say.
Someone put out the reel of him dancing?
Yeah. They have the reel, the actual, like, what do you call it? The audition tapes. So there's footage of him dancing with Jennifer Grey, and it's like, no. But Patrick Swayze actually had a history of dance. Patrick Swayze actually was a dancer, although at the time he wanted to be known more for his acting skills rather than dancing. So he ended up taking in his on his resume, if you will, or his headshots in bold. It apparently said no dancing, and unfortunately, the writer who was a part of the filming process was there really wanted Patrick Swayze on it because he just fit the bill, and so they talked about it and got it figured out. So it essentially became this huge pariah of the time during the late 80s because of the fact that it was a film that resonated with a lot of people who didn't want the typical, you know, love story. It almost kind of delves into like classic, but not classic, still modern storytelling, because you have elements of things like, you know, a class system where, you know, the haves and the have-nots. You have, it's almost like a modern day West Side Story kind of thing. Like, you have the haves and the have-nots. Mm-hmm. You have situations with like with pregnancy, and you have situations with like, you know, with I mean, let's be honest, there's situations of rape. You have situations of, you know, of predatorial older women. And you have situations.
Yeah, some real thirsty people in this movie.
There was a lot of thirsty people. So here's the thing. When I first saw this film, I saw it when I was like 7 or 8, maybe 9. I saw it when I was young. I don't like, it didn't impact me. Like, I just saw it and I just remember like, oh, it was a dancing movie. Oh, the dancing movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember any of the stuff that is actually in this movie when I re-saw this. I didn't remember the pregnancy and illegal abortion aspect of this film. I'm like, where the heck was that? How long has that been in the movie? It took me by surprise because I was like, no, this was the dancing movie. This was the movie that everybody danced in. It was a dancing movie. And I'm like, hold on. Where is this what back alley doctor are they working with here? Like, there was stuff in this movie that I'm like, yeah, that was illegal, like in the movie. But it's still, I mean, and we're just so let's kind of dive into the movie, because there's a lot of opinions I have about this movie.
Yeah, there's a lot of opinions I have, questions about the sister Lisa. What is her life even? Because like, she is just in this movie, and I have so many questions about her.
So. Oddly enough, like we said, this film takes place during the 60s. It's over the course of one summer, and you have your main protagonist, Baby, who is essentially spending the time in the Catskills, which is in Upper New York, in the Upper New York area, the Catskills with her family before she goes off to the Peace Corps and changes the world, like her dad tells the resort manager or whatever he is. And she ends up, you know, stumbling upon one of the meetings with the resort manager and the staff. And it's interesting because it's so blatant. I'm surprised I didn't catch it when I was younger, but it's so blatant in terms of, it's like, you are like the resort manager telling the staff, you are here to woo the young women. All of them. What do you say? Even the dogs?
Yeah, that's what he said.
He goes like, take him for a walk. Take him for a walk. I was like, oh my gosh, the misogyny in this movie.
The misogyny in this movie is so heavy. Like, what was it? At one point, like this guy who's interested in Baby, like, basically tells her to shut up in front of her dad. And I was like, if anyone had ever said something like that to my daughter, I would say something I can't say on this podcast to that man, that boy, that man child. Like, just get out of here. Are you kidding me?
And it's true, because it's very left field. Like, you're thinking, all right, this is from the 80s. It's a tale that's held, you know, true to the entire time. Like, it's been tested and tried and still holds true to like what people like nowadays, because people are still watching it. And you're like, all right, like, you're getting into the, you're watching the film and you're like, all right, cool, 1980s, yeah, you know, there's that whole machismo thing, but like, whole, yeah, you need to woo all of them, you need to, even the dogs, and you do. I'm like, oh man, okay, all right, okay, count it back. And so you get your first introduction of Johnny, who's this carefree, you know, kind of like, yeah, I'm just, you know, I'm super cool. I'm part of the dance team. Look at me.
Yeah, just walking in late to the staff meeting.
Yeah. And you get your first iteration of, you know, Patrick Swayze trying to be young. And he's apparently like just the dance instructor. He does a bunch of cool, you know, he seems really cool to the group and everybody else, except for like the workers who are there that are like Yale attendees or Harvard attendees. Apparently this is something they do to not only woo daughters, but also to get options to get help for schooling or even funding, you know? So I'm like, oh,
yeah,
okay,
it's a very interesting system these people have set up here. Where you work at, like,
it's
a
whole operation.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's a whole operation. Let's not sugarcoat this mess. I had to take a drink because of that. But yeah, so you get your introduction. Baby sees like what it's like behind the scenes. You get the introduction of Johnny, and Johnny, right from the get-go, does not think highly of Baby. Like, I don't know why. Maybe it's Patrick Swayze's like real impression of Jennifer Grey, but he does not take to her at all. Like, he even leaves her on the dance floor.
I completely thought that was due to like just the other women that he's dealing with, because the other women are so handsy and so superficial that I thought he just was like, oh, you're just like them. You're just a rich girl who runs to daddy whenever there's a problem and solves it with money type thing. Like, he was just
assuming
that's who she was.
At the time in the film, you realize when she does get money for something, you're like, no, she's helping, you jerk. Like, this is okay. But he's like, oh, yeah, you just solve it with money. Yeah, because money is the answer to this particular problem. It's like, it's not like you're trying to put a Band-Aid on the Grand Canyon. You're over here trying to take care of something and... I don't know. But I really think there are a lot of unique instances in this film, which I'm going to be really honest. I'm going to talk about the overview of the film, my general take on the whole film. I honestly feel that this film is about it's about like the human sexuality, like the perspectives of human sexuality. I know there are people out there like, no, it's about dance. It's about finding yourself. And Johnny needs to find himself, and so does Baby. And they're finding themselves, and they're defining who they are. And it's like, no, this movie's about sex. Like, 100%.
Yeah, like, the intro to the like movie is just people grinding to each other through the opening credits. Yeah, this movie's mostly about sex.
This, well, like, in some sense or another, this is like, this to me feels like the story of the sexual awakening of a young girl, which at the time, Baby's only 17. So take that with what you will. Like, Baby's 17, Johnny's supposed to be like 27.
Okay, that's...
Yeah, he... But it's like it's like that young, it's like the master taking on the student kind of thing, because you know that's not going to go anywhere. You know that relationship between the two of them is not going to go anywhere. Plus, this is 1963. That's the least bad thing that's probably happened in the 60s in terms of age difference. I mean, we're not talking like what was his name? Not Roy Orbison, Jerry Lee Lewis, who marries his like 14-year-old or 12-year-old cousin. Yeah, read a book. Because there's a lot of... But, like, the fact is like, this film is completely about a young girl's sexual awakening to recognizing her definition within her sexual prowess, I guess, if you want to put it that way. I don't really feel like this movie... I mean, yes, there are elements that are like, oh, yeah, you know, we're talking about, you know, somebody who is, you know, defining their true selves, their recognizing the person that they are always meant to be, and they're going to stand true and stand tall. But I honestly feel like that could have all been achieved minus a male lead. Like, if we're really talking about, and this is kind of where my mindset goes, if we're really talking about the defining opportunities for a young girl to become the woman she's always meant to be, then why does she need a male counterpart? You know?
Yeah. Well, that's no, like, I'm thinking about it. It's just the way that this movie handles the sexism. That's the reason why he's there. To, like,
100%
cut through, like, the BS she's dealing with a lot of the times. Because, like, she does not have many people in her corner.
True.
Like, from her sister to her dad, like, she's almost by herself for most of the movie.
No, I agree. And the biggest thing that I watched the film and I did some research on the movie, and I'm looking at a lot of different people who are like, oh, you know, this movie has, you know, the elements of self-discovery. This movie, I mean, she's like, oh, it's not just about dancing. And obviously it's not just about dancing. There are, she's like, there's the writer of the film, of the script. I'll get it right, I promise. The writer of the script, you know, she's like, oh, you know, this is about, you know, self-discovery. This is about finding yourself. This is about, I have to say, so here's the thing. I actually like this movie,
mm-hmm.
because I think there's a lot about it in the honesty about it. And that's one of the big things about this film that not many people are willing to talk about, because in the honesty of it, there's a lot of things that really are taboo for film. When this film was getting promoted after it hit, you know, after it was done and it was created and they were getting ready to throw it into theaters, it had a huge sponsorship from Clearasil because they wanted to target the movie to teens.
What's Clearasil?
However, Clearasil, the acne cream.
Oh, okay.
However, when they heard there was an abortion scene in the film, they were like, we'll pay for that scene to be removed from the film. And the writers and the directors were like, nope. Because then what's the whole point of the film? The whole purpose of the film is, the situation for the abortion to happen is the reason why Baby gets thrown into the situations that she's in, and that's what throws Johnny and Baby into the situations that they're in, which results in the end product of the film itself. So kudos on them
the
for...
The abortion scene is like the main engine of this movie. If you take that out, it kind of doesn't go anywhere real fast.
Yeah. So because of the fact that this film was very heavy on the emphasis of what's going on in the world today at the time and what is technically kind of taboo to talk about, you know, talking about abortion and finding love in the time of all that and discovering your body. I mean, if you look at the progression of this woman's, you know, progress throughout her dancing, and mind you, quick note, no, you don't have to find sexuality in dancing every time there's dancing. You can, you know, there's beauty and there's art in it as well, but let's be real. Let's be adults. Let's be grown-ups, shall we? You know, there's a reason why in a lot of these scenes, they're wearing very skimpy clothes. They're dressed a certain way. They move very sensually. You know, it's not subtle. It's not like hidden subtext. It's not like subconscious commentary. They're literally like groin on like legs. You know, I was going to get it. Groin on like legs, you know, gyrations and, you know, people getting flipped and underwears being seen and everything else in between. And it's like, There's a certain kind of sensuality to that type of dancing. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
However, the identity of oneself being found in that certain kind of sexual or sensuality, it's not wrong. it's kind of like the coming of age story for a lot of, you know, for a lot of people nowadays, or for anybody who's had those, you know, those times where you find yourself, you know, through that type of mindset, like a lot of people just do, you know. And this is one of those films where you actually have a situation where a young woman becomes the young girl finds herself becoming a woman through the understanding of how her body moves, the confidence in herself, and the capability and ability that her body can perform at. I mean, am I wrong?
No. She was discovering, like, just a lot about what, like, her own agency is throughout this entire movie.
Yeah, and it's not, like I said, it's not bad. We're not saying that that's a bad thing.
Mm.
You know, the surprise of this entirety of the film is that it resonates with actual young people, with actual teenagers, with actual like, you know, 16, 17, even 15-year-olds. This resonates because of the fact that people are beginning to discover themselves. They're starting to find out who they are, what they like, who they like. And, you know, you find that through this, through certain, you know, kinds of attractions that you have, through the different kinds of, you know, honest conversations you have. And that's all what a dance is really. It's an honest conversation you have with someone else that translates into a beautiful dialogue. Like, take, for instance, you and myself. We have conversations like this every week.
Yep.
And the ability that we have to converse so easily, one would say it's like a dance where I talk, I say things, you talk, you say things, I respond, you respond. You know, the delicate balance of that back and forth that happens, it's almost like a dance. And it's through that conversation that you and I know each other more. And that's kind of the same mindset with this movie, you know, through the sensuality of the movements and the gracefulness that they begin to, you know, exude in every step that they take. It's just, it's beautiful. And to get to the point to where they are, like, I believe that is what made this film the surprise hit that it was, because it not only resonated with people who are young, and which is what you want to do. You want to get teenagers into the theaters. You want to get young people, you know, because young people become lifetime followers of this movie. You know, they were able to get the young people, but not only that, it also, you know, translated across to like other people, like older folk, like the individual who actually found this script, the corporate individual who from Vestron who found this script ended up falling in love with it after he read it over the course of a weekend. I believe it was like on a Sunday he read through the entire script and was like, oh my gosh, this is my life, except I'm a guy and this is a girl in the book, in the script. But he goes, I spent time in the Catskills and I went ahead and I did these kinds of things, you know, and I experienced that, and that's cool because of the fact that somebody of that age, which he was older, but it resonated with him. And you know that it just, I think in that subtle, fine, you know, vein of people who don't want to talk about it, but know that they connect with it, are like, yeah, you know, I kind of like that movie because, you know, it's just, you know, seeing Patrick Swayze and, you know, Jennifer Grey and they dance and, and he lifts her up and, you know, it's time of it. Like, I love all of that. Like, people will say that kind of thing, but they won't be outward about it. Like, you're not going to go up to someone and say, hey, what'd you think about Dirty Dancing? Oh, man, that movie was tight. Bro, did you check out that scene where he did that perfect pirouette? Like, for real, dog. For real. No, people aren't going to be like that. But
yeah, no one's going to be like that. Ridiculous.
Don't knock my bro talk. But it's opportunities like that. It's the opportunities to speak about it openly that you tend to find out how many people share the similarities for their attraction to it. And I think that's the surprise hit about it. Obviously, I'm more than certain the percentage of female to male in terms of gender of people who went to go see the film may have been more female than male. But that's not to say that it still doesn't resonate with, you know, men, young men, older men. I mean, it's still, you know, that's not to say it still doesn't resonate with them. But there's a certain kind of recognizing the same journey, maybe not in the same pathway or even the same, you know, structure as someone else, but recognizing those same steps that it took to get from where baby started at the beginning of the movie to where baby was at the end of the movie. You know, those are the things that people resonate with the most. What do you think?
Well, I was mostly thinking, like, you know, what do I resonate with this movie?
That's a great question.
Yeah. And I think the answer is not much, because, like, I don't have, like, some of, like, either of their real experience. Like, you know, like, I don't come from a well-to-do family like baby. And, you know, I have certain ideas about the world, and I try to, like, you know, in, like, use what I can't do. Well, I guess I kind of do. I don't know. Maybe I do identify.
I was going to say, like,
more with her.
I think one of the things for you, one of the things I think for you that I honestly think kind of mirrors is even your journey into this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you took the steps to become a part of this show, and then situations occurred that dropped the trio down to a duo, and a lot of weight was put on you. But at the same time, you through the conversations that you and I had, you began to learn your moves and your dances and your stances and your arm
keep
structures
pulling
and everything
back to
else.
Dancing.
Through, because I mean,
yeah,
I mean, it's dirty dancing. We don't actually have dirty conversations, but that's for the Filmlosophers After Dark.
Oh my gosh.
But like in the scope of the dynamic of your journey into becoming where you are today, I mean, I think there's significant growth. And obviously it's not in the same element of, oh, you know, you've become a fine young man, Spencer. No. I'm not saying anything like that. What I am saying is, in the scope of you progressing to becoming something more than what you started out with on this journey, you know, baby takes the steps to committing to doing something to help someone else, not having any clue of how to do it. And she soon starts recognizing her true potential and her ability on a basic level. Yes. This film, on a very, very basic level, yes, this is a film about people finding themselves.
Mm-hmm.
through the avenues that they go about. It really leans more towards a very sensual awakening type mindset. However, at the very basic core of it, yes, it is a define who you are kind of thing. But you had that same journey in terms of you coming into this, not knowing much in terms of podcasting, to the point where now, I mean, you and I hold the fort down on episodes just between the two of us.
Yeah.
You know?
I think we do okay.
So, I mean, I think there's some truth in there, you know? I'm not going to lift you, but still.
Well, that's fine. That's just fine, fine, fine.
Wow, it sounds like there's a little bit of disappointment there.
No. I can lift myself. It's fine. is there anything that, like, you feel like you resonate with in this movie?
Oh, there's a ton. I really feel like for me, recognizing the awareness of, so I recognized growing up same as you, I didn't have all the monies in the world, and I didn't go to like Catskills every year or whatever. I didn't do all that.
I didn't realize that was a real place. I thought it was made up.
Honestly, I hadn't heard about it until The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Ah, okay.
So that they end up going to the Catskills at one point in time. I don't know. But the journey, there are there are several instances in my life where I feel like this journey resembles in some form or another part of my growth and part of who I am. You know, maybe not so much, you know, in the central aspect of it, maybe some in, you know, there's a lot of different places and spaces that I've had in my life to grow and learn. And, you know, I'm appreciative of having that journey that I can say resembles to some extent what baby goes through, you know, and maybe not with another person, but the idea of being aware of myself, you know, that's always a big plus. Anytime you can come to a place where you are aware that you need to be the best you for you, you know, that's always, you know, and that confidence, having that confidence in yourself to be that best you, you know, because in all honesty, if you take the whole film in its entirety, that end sequence, the only reason why, and I know I'm going to probably spoil the movie a little bit, but the only reason why she is able to be lifted the way that she is by Patrick Swayze's Johnny Castle is because she fully trusts him. So she is confident in herself and her ability and trusts that he's going to lift her properly without dropping her. So there's a sense of like confidence.
Wait, that's the reason why she couldn't do it before?
Well, because he says that at some point, he goes, you got to trust me. You got to, you know, you got to let go and then just jump fully into it, like commit into it when they're in the water and they're trying to figure it out or they're trying to do the lift earlier on. So
okay.
It's a mindset of like, yeah, okay, I'm confident in who I am. And it got me it. The mirror of that is, you know, I'm at a place where I am confident in who I am and what I do, you know, and that's kind of that mirror to her journey. So can you say that you can't think of any other opportunity where you resonate with that?
I mean, I guess. I totally thought she was clumsy. That's why I thought she couldn't do the whole jump thing. So
well,
I'm like,
there's a heavy emphasis
issue.
There's a whole emphasis throughout the early part of the film where, you know, baby doesn't do anything. You know, she's daddy's little girl. Baby never lies, which means she doesn't take risks, which means she doesn't stray far from what she normally does. You know,
wasn't she trying to go into the Peace Corps? Wasn't that risky in itself?
But she hadn't gone yet. Just because she signed up doesn't mean she went.
I guess that's true.
You know? So, you have to admit, I mean, yes, it is not it's not one of the greatest stories of all time, but it's definitely...
It's not that.
Huh?
I said it's not that, no.
But the recognition of the story and how our stories can mirror that, I think that's what made it and still makes it worth remembering. You know, that is the part of the film that people are like, oh man, yeah, like totally. When she's, you know, when she's fully, you know, comfortable in her own skin and she's dancing and they're both dancing and, you know, that's, you know, that's definitely something, you know, I can resonate, you know, being comfortable in your own skin, being willing to be seen, to be taken, you know, to be held, you know, whatever it may be, in whatever aspect, to be comfortable in the situations that you don't really have any choice of being in, you choose to be the most comfortable in your own skin. You know, people can resonate with that. And those are the prime moments in the film that are meant to be shared. Those are the prime instances where you can say, yeah, heck yeah, nobody puts baby in a corner. Because, you know, you find yourself, you know, I'm, and mind you, it goes into a more like theological, not theological, bad choice of words, but like a,
I was gonna say theological,
like a,
because oh, I missed a lot then.
Because the Lord's chips were no, like you take a more like psychological approach to it, and you think, okay, if I'm representing baby to some extent, or baby's representing some extent to me, yeah, I don't want to be put in a corner. I'm going to keep moving forward. I'm going to keep becoming me. And those self-realization moments, those create pretty awesome opportunities to share with other people. So, what do you think about that?
I think I'm going to watch this movie on Friday with a different set of eyes.
Yeah. Well, there you go. And that's part of the whole, you know, going back to what Lionsgate is doing and the whole allure of it all. You have to appreciate the fact this movie was done back in 1987. It's definitely a movie where you don't expect it to resonate so hard, but then you find yourself seeing all the details that are in between the lines, and you give yourself the opportunity to say, you know what, maybe it's not so much on a sensual level, maybe it's not so much in a physical level, but I am finding, you know, who I am and committing to, against all norms and comfort zones, committing to being this because, number one, it makes me the best me I can be, and number two, because in some way or another, it'll also benefit other people.
Okay, so after thinking about it, I think I understand why I didn't see that as much during this.
Did you have the volume off again?
No, I did not. The thing about me is, like, I noticed the oddness in movies, and there were some really odd choices in this movie, from the entire storyline of the sister Lisa, from her, like, being, like, kind of attracted to this, like, real dirtbag Robbie.
Yeah.
And then her just walking in on him having sex with some other girl.
Oh, no. Hold up. That wasn't just another girl. That was an old woman. That was the old lady who...
Oh, was it?
Who Johnny rebuffs
her. That was the tattletale lady?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I did not even recognize her. It was dark in that room. Oh, that's even grosser. Wow.
You're definitely going to be paying attention more in the second time around.
Because I wasn't expecting her to just walk in like that and that happening.
And even then, in the Lisa storyline, I mean, you have instances where it's like somebody who wants to be who they want to be quickly, and so they jump, you know, steps, and they want to be like, oh, well, you know what? I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to go for what I want right now because, you know, I don't want to go through processes A, B, and C. I want to get directly to D, no pun intended. I want to get directly to D without, you know, having to do all the work prior. And mind you, it didn't bode well. And mind you, that's not to say for every person it's going to bode well, but that's to say, you know what? Sometimes taking your time to do A, B, and C have much more of an enriching opportunity for you to see how better off you've become taking those steps rather than jumping directly from A to D, you know, and thinking that you deserve to be there.
Yeah.
Which, mind you, I'm going to preface that with saying some people, they flow a bit easier and they get to D before, you know, people get through B, C, you know, and
like
there's
a math
there's
equation
no
right now, Eddie.
Oh yeah, I'm totally you know, if Johnny has three watermelons and I'm just, but you know what, some people, yeah, if they can do that, by all means, knock yourselves out, you know, but the majority of people who don't have a lot of those opportunities, those, you know, instances where the world opens up for them and gives them those shots, B, C, and D, you know, going through B, C to get to D shows the hard work that you put into it and what you can definitely shine on about making it there, you know? So, but yeah, any final thoughts on the film?
Last random thought from this film.
Okay.
It was so bizarre for right before the climax of this movie that there's just like this company sing-along thing from like Hearts to Minds to Hands to whatever and back again. I was like, what is happening? People were talking and I was so confused with this long song about nonsense, and
was that
wild.
The song they were singing on the stage?
Yes. I was like, what is happening? Why would people willingly sit there and subject themselves to this?
One word, Spencer: tradition.
Oh no.
It's
Ain't nobody got time for that. That's ridiculous. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, wrapping this whole thing up, I don't know if there's really much more to take on that. But wrapping this whole thing up, honestly, this is a movie where if you get the opportunity to, I don't want to do a rating now because I want people to get the opportunity to go and see it. Yeah. I want people to go and check it out. So if you get a chance, check out the film this Friday at 6 o'clock. I believe it's at 6 o'clock.
6 Pacific, 9 Eastern.
Okay, 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Check it out on Lionsgate's YouTube channel. It's already scheduled on there. Once it goes live, you'll probably have a couple minutes to get into it. It's really cool. And honestly, kudos to Lionsgate for doing something like this, like being able to give.
Yeah, it's actually really awesome.
It is, and it's really a great opportunity to remember all those people who are still a valuable part of the movie industry by, you know, being the ticket taker, being the concession stand, people, being the projectionist, being everybody that you need them to be, even behind the scenes. They're the people who matter in this type of thing. And if you're somebody who loves going to the movies, then you're going to want to be a part of this. You're going to want to show support. And if you can, donate. It's going to be an awesome opportunity. So I can't wait to see all the people that are going to be in the chat while the YouTube stream is going to be going. So, yeah. So this was a surprising conversation, to say the least. To be quite frank, we weren't too sure what direction this conversation was going to take. But you know what? It took a good direction, and it was a good conversation. So,
yeah. What do you, we made it.
Yeah, we definitely made it. So, but that wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.